Yeah, instead of green screen in my ceiling and my super fabulous like chandelier thing over here. Hi.
I was about to say, I was waiting for the dramatic pan down.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Calder's Calling, the Calder Times flagship podcast and your premier podcast destination for everything surrounding the American Hockey League. I'm Jay Foster, joined today by my wonderful co-hosts, Dina Weinheimer and Corey Swartz. It's a full squad here for today's episode, which is very exciting. Before we kick things off, if you aren't already subscribed to us on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube, go ahead and do that now. If you're currently watching us on YouTube, then like, share, hit that little bell button below the video. And what that'll do is it'll notify you every time a new episode is posted. And before we get started, I'd also like to thank our show sponsor, Document Doctors. While not on the ice, they can help you and your business optimize and increase your revenue and profits to a bigger slice. Check out documentdoctorsllc.com and don't forget to mention that the Calder Times sent you to them. Let's start off with kind of our quick hits segment. And I believe we're going to be bookending this little segment with the same player, which I like a lot. So Dina, what is up with Spencer Knight at the minute?
So Spencer Knight, just what a year. I mean, if we look back 365 days until now, what a year it has been for him. But looking more recently, he has a brand new accolade to add to his resume. Charlotte Checkers franchise holder for the longest shutout streak ever at 213 minutes and 23 seconds. That's just mind-boggling, but it beats out Michael Layton's record of 192 minutes and 2 seconds. So congratulations, Spencer Knight. And I believe, Jay, you have another franchise record here.
Yes, it's kind of a franchise record episode today, I think. Yep. Let's talk about Chase DeLeo, who is now the Gulls' all-time leading point scorer with, I believe, 182 points. He just took over Sam Carrick, who held the record previously with 181. And then now in third place, Corey Tropp with 157. And in fourth place, Kelly Kosler with 141. Chase DeLeo, being a veteran, is very strange to me because in my head, he still was only drafted like 2 years ago. Right. And then I looked it up and he's like in his 30s. And I was like, that can't possibly be right. Just another example of like the passage of time taking over here. But yeah, good for DeLeo. He's been great for the Gulls since he arrived there, and hopefully will continue to be great for many more seasons.
Let's see. Whenever I think of Chase DeLeo, I always think of like on the one podcast I was on before, we did like a fantasy hockey type thing where like we had like different players and we kind of tracked them all season. And Chase DeLeo was like my golden goose. Like he was never in the AHL.
Yeah.
When I think I had to re-roll on him because I just was straight up was not getting any points of them that season. And like, it's just one of those things like that has never escaped my mind with him. Like, you know, I don't even remember who the rest of my players were, but like, I will always just remember Chase DeLeo for that specific minigame. But anyways, speaking of franchise records, I have a 3-pack of stats for you guys from the lone Hershey Bears game of the weekend this past weekend, where the Bears beat the Hartford Wolfpack in a shootout. The game happened to be Mike Vecchione's 400th professional game, as well as Bears head coach Todd Nelson's 400th win behind the bench as a coach. And that brings him into some elite territory here, guys. Let me pull up the stat sheet. I lost it here before I started saying this. But I believe Todd Nelson ranks, I want to say it's eighth all-time in the AHL in terms of wins for a head coach. So congrats to the Bears bench boss there, as well as the win secured a franchise record for the Bears for their best road wins percentage in franchise history. Yeah. So historic season for the Bears all around, no matter where they're playing at, It's just all good things this season, it seems.
God, how do you cope with the hardships of being a Hershey Bears fan? One very quick correction on Todd Nelson. He is now tied for 7th all time. In wins with 400, tied with Kevin Dineen. Do you want to know a fully insane stat? And I discovered this when I was doing some research for the AHL Hall of Fame ceremony at the All-Star Game this season. He has 400 wins, which is good for 7th. The guy in first place has more than double that. Roy Sommer is the all-time winningest head coach. He has 826 wins. Second place, 636 wins. Roy Sommer.
Wow.
Guys. I know this was a segment about Todd Nelson, but I just had to... Every time I think about just how good Roy Sommer was for so long, I have to talk about it. So that's my little aside there. Speaking of coaching victories.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a perfect segue. So we're going to look to the North Division and the Rochester Americans and their head coach, Seth Appert, who has surpassed Mike Keenan and Chris Taylor for 5th all-time in coaching victories with the Amerks at 117. Now, Appert has guided the Amerks to a 117, 93, 21, and 10 record. And as of right now, three straight playoff appearances now on March 30th. He also became the 4th head coach in the 68-year history of the franchise to man the bench for 241 career games. And as much as this pains me to say it, this all coming off the back of a 4-3 overtime win against the Cleveland Monsters. That was a fun yet painful game to watch because it ended so quick in overtime. But anyway. I digress.
Sometimes the things that are good and fun also hurt you.
Yes.
But I want to go from veteran players and record breaking and all of that kind of fun stuff that you get with guys that have been around the league for a long time for the newest exciting member of the AHL history. The Sharks 2022 first round pick, Philip Bystedt, has his season finished over in Sweden. And he has been assigned to the Barracuda. He's going to finish the season there. And this is a really quick hit because I don't really have a lot of like analysis or anything here. I'm just really excited about Bystedt making his AHL debut. I'm glad that he went straight to the AHL and not stopping off with the Sharks. I think he's going to be a really exciting player to watch for the rest of this season. And hopefully we see... Maybe not quite the same highlight reel goal as we saw from David Reinbacher in his AHL debut a couple of weeks ago, but something similar to that would be just swell.
And to cap all this off here, we have some awards handed out by the league here as we transition into the month of April. The Players of the Month. So the AHL selected 3 different players for 3 different categories, one being the overall player of the month, the rookie of the month, as well as the goaltender of the month for the month of March. And those winners are Rockford IceHogs forward Cole Gutman for the player of the month, Manitoba Moose forward Brad Lambert as the rookie of the month, and goaltender Spencer Knight as the goaltender of the month for March of 2024. So congrats to all of those winners there. Obviously, we just talked a little bit about Spencer Knight. And, you know, based on those records alone, I think he's a tough candidate to beat out there. And one more for you guys. Speaking of goaltenders, there's a little bit of an Atlantic Division shakeup here as we're going down the stretch. As the Philadelphia Flyers announced that they have acquired, and I say acquired is a little bit of a loose term here, not one but 2 goaltenders for their organization. The team added earlier this week goaltender Ivan Fedotov from the Continental Hockey League after his contract was terminated. Now, Fedotov is not slated to appear for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms this season, but his addition does send goaltender Felix Sandstrom back to Lehigh Valley. And general manager Danny Briere told reporters last week that the organization is working to bring over highly regarded goaltender prospect Alexei Kolosov, who is a 3rd-round draft pick of the team back in 2021 after his season in the KHL came to an end. So suddenly, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, who are one of the more beleaguered teams this season in terms of goaltending and goaltending losses suddenly got beefed up as they are going down the stretch here with a very important stretch here. They're currently in the last playoff spot in the Atlantic Division, hanging on by just 2 points over the Springfield Thunderbirds. Safe to say two really big additions for the Phantoms as they continue to try to push to make the postseason. And let be remembered here real quick that the Phantoms have not played a home playoff game at PPL Center since 2018. They got robbed of that last season. It's been, you know, almost half a decade since the Phantoms have been able to host a playoff game. And those fans down there, I'm sure, are very much hoping that this is the year they get that chance.
It's going to be interesting. As we can, we're going to talk a little bit about playoff pushes in later on in the episode, actually. We have a couple of segments. We've got a very special guest who's going to be talking to us about the Laval Rockets playoff push. And I believe we're also going to be talking a little bit later on about teams that haven't quite clinched and teams that are about to clinch, and what the exciting playoff races are going to be. So we'll get into all of that later on. But we've talked about the AHL's player, rookie, goalie of the month. And let's do our three stars of the week. And all three of us are here, so everyone gets to have a star, which is very exciting. And I believe, Corey, you and I have chosen players with the same name is the theme of this three stars. So who's your star of the week this week?
I have to pick on a little bit of a closer to home, closer to the heart one here, and go with Hershey Bears forward Ethan Frank. This guy's a guy where, you know, we saw what he did in the playoffs last season. He scored that big goal to open game three of the Calder Cup Finals. Scored the only goal of Hershey's game against the Hartford Wolfpack before they ended up having to take that in a shootout. But just, you know, when you have a guy like this, I mean, you were seeing on the screen if you're watching on YouTube here, this great shot that Frank possesses. It was a great overall team play. You know, Dubé found it to him in the slot. Mike Vecchione did a great job of pushing the defenseman back. And when you give Ethan Frank that much time and space, he's not going to miss from that angle. He's had points in four of his last five games. That gives him four goals and two assists for 6 points in that stretch. An absolute difference maker for the Bears who, you know, again, kind of like last year, we're kind of seeing them a little bit starved for offense at times this season. But, you know, Ethan Frank is one of those great difference makers. A guy that's, you know, as he did last season, he's going to score a clutch goal just when you need it, and he did that on Saturday in Hartford. So he's a big reason why the Bears are 1 point away from clinching the Atlantic Division as of this recording.
I have also gone with an Ethan, and I've also gone with a player a little bit closer to home, because I feel like sometimes you just have to be a homer. On paper, this is not like a real standout week or anything for a player necessarily. Ethan Cardwell becomes the sixth AHL rookie to hit the 20-goal mark this season. Again, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see his 20th goal. He had 2 points in three games this week, one goal and one assist. But here's the interesting thing about Ethan Cardwell. He is, like I said, he is a rookie. He is, I believe, 21 years of age as of right now. Doesn't turn 22 until August, I believe. He's leading the Barracuda in goals and is currently fourth in scoring on the team. As a rookie. So I just wanted to give him a shout out. I feel like we've talked about him quite a lot this season on Calder's Calling, but I think there's a reason for that. I think there's a reason that he was the San Jose Sharks Prospect of the Year last year. So he is definitely showing why he got that accolade. And I'm just really, really excited to see what he does next season. After, you know, with a whole full year of pro hockey and pro hockey training under him, I'm really excited to see where he goes from here. Dina, you picked someone that's not named Ethan.
I did. I don't know
if that's allowed.
I'm going to say it is allowed.
Okay. Well, you're the boss. So yeah. I'm not going to ask you.
But real quick, though, I don't think I've ever had a chance to sit down and watch a Barracuda game this season, and I just keep looking at Ethan Cardwell's play on that game, on that play, and the way he just picks up the puck on the turnover and just silky smooth gets it in, and that super quick release.
He's like, "Oh, this is mine. Thank you very much. Let's go."
Yeah. But like you said, I picked somebody not named Ethan. So to all the Ethans out there, I'm sorry. We gotta. you know, maybe plan this a little bit better for next time. But I am going with Yuri Kulik of the Rochester Americans. Basically, he's just doing so well right now, you know, and I don't know, this goal right here, they were on a 5-on-3. Now, at this point, Rochester was down for a while, 3-1 against the Cleveland Monsters. And then on a 5-on-3, Yuri Kulik, just super red hot shot. It just like this on here, just way too much for Jet Greaves, and he ties the game. And that ended up taking the Rochester Americans into overtime and winning. He's got goals in back-to-back games now, 9 points in the last 5 games, 4 goals, 5 assists, just a one-timer for his 21st of the season, and he leads all Amherst scorers.
I did quickly look up to see if there were any other Ethans that we could have mentioned, and there is more Ethans in the league, so maybe, maybe we'll see what we can do about having an all Ethan star group at some point, just because I think that would be funny. It doesn't even have to be Ethan, just any name. Everyone has to pick the same one.
I'm down to try that out.
I love when we do just things that are a little weird. Sue me. We're going to move on. We've done our quick hits. We've done our 3 stars. Before we move on to our next segment, I have a little bit more to share about our sponsor, Document Doctors. Document Doctors, a proud sponsor of the Calder's Calling podcast and the Calder Times, offers affordable solutions to help optimize your business and keep the good times rolling. They offer a content-focused solution such as training document creation, back office process optimization, policy and procedure development, and much, much more. Support the podcast and the Calder Times by visiting them at documentdoctorsllc.com. And don't forget to mention us when you're talking to their team of contentologists. Once again, that is documentdoctorsllc.com. Shop and support small businesses today. Now, Corey, I believe we have a brave to throw a brand new segment concept out in like the final month of the season, but it looks like we've got a new segment concept here. So what are we talking about today?
Well, I scrapped my original idea. Instead, I opted to go, as I couldn't really think of a good framework for it, frankly, but I opted to talk about AHL graduates right now, because over the weekend, the Washington Capitals put on this big time celebration for John Carlson, who's a defenseman. He played his 1,000th NHL game. I believe that would have been on Saturday night, I believe, if memory serves. And it was this great celebration and all that stuff. And it made me feel, as you were saying about Chase DeLeo, I was feeling really old about that, because I was like, man, this guy, I'm like, they're not talking enough about Carlson kind of getting his start with the Bears. He scored a Calder Cup clinching goal, believe it or not, in game 6 of the finals in 2010. And it just kind of got me thinking. I was like, man, we kind of take some AHL grads for granted. And it's extremely rare. I don't know that I don't think it's happened with any other player in the history of the current Bears and Capitals affiliation, that there's been some player that's graduated from the Bears and kind of turned into a 1,000 player game player type of thing. You know, it's weird seeing Carlson, because like forever he's stuck in my mind as like this kind of kid where like, you know, he's kind of, you know, how he was when he won the Calder Cup. And, you know, now he's, you know, he's aged. He's, you know, we see a lot of differences. It's kind of like seeing Alexander Ovechkin for the first time in a while, where you see like he has some gray in his beard now. He's carrying his bag of Subway and his Flamin' Hot Cheetos onto the plane for his pregame meal on the road. But it got me thinking, what are some of you guys' favorite examples of, you know, AHL grads that have gone on to kind of have these illustrious careers that people might not remember are exactly AHL grads? If any come to mind right off the top of your head, I know I can think of a boatload of guys.
God, Jay, do you want to take this one first?
Every single player in the history of the AHL.
So just in general, like AHL grads?
In general, or guys that, you know, particularly memorable ones for you guys, because Carlson's a particularly memorable one for me as part of the back-to-back Calder Cup champions from the, you know, basically my childhood there in a lot of ways. You know, it's weird to say that in regards to the last 2 Calder Cup championships preceding last season for the Bears. But just kind of like inseparable types. And obviously, you know, this doesn't have to be winners per se. You know, we've, you know, every, you know, anybody's kind of graduated through the AHL, right? Like it's not, you know, it's an easy list to think of.
Can I just name drop perhaps one of my favorite hockey players of all time and also played with Cleveland, now playing overseas, but Lukas Sedlak, part of that 2016 Calder Cup winning team. I don't know. There's just something about him that just endeared my heart to this man. And, but yeah, like a lot of mine have to do with Cleveland or I guess before in Cleveland when they were the Springfield Falcons, but a lot of the Jackets players I came up with there, like Cam Atkinson, especially, just one of my favorite AHL grads turned NHLers.
Yeah.
If I can go on another twist one for this one, one of the guys that kind of falls in the opposite category for me is Morgan Geeky.
Your personal enemy.
he's kind of like I feel like this guy just likes to torment me. Like when he was in the AHL with the Charlotte Checkers, he was of course part of that 2019 squad that was like unbeatable, basically. So he hurt me a lot of times there. And then anytime I seem like I let my guard down a little bit, he's playing for some team and like this totally torches. You know, at the NHL level, it's he always seems to score against my Flyers at some point, you know, or against the Capitals if I'm happy to be catching one of their games. Like, this guy just scores at all times when I'm watching him. And, like, don't get it wrong. I've tweeted a few times that this guy absolutely deserves to be in the NHL full-time and deserves a full-time roster. He's really good. But he is, like, my number one personal guy that, you know, it's kind of like the anti-John Carlson where, like, all this stuff is good memories. For Morgan Geeky, it's always just been times that he's tortured me. So that's one of the opposite ends of the spectrum, certainly.
Yeah, I still think I'm still like, man, I've never heard of a single hockey player. you know, it's what your favorite movie is, and you're like, I've never seen a movie. I don't know a single movie. What I would really, this is not something I can research like as we're actively recording. I would love to know how many players, how many AHL graduates hit 1,000 NHL games, because I bet it is not a lot. There's only about 380 players have hit 1,000 NHL games ever. So, I would love to know what the stats are on players who started in the AHL, hit 1,000 games.
And like you can kind of, you know, obviously this is open ended. This is not like, oh, hey guys, do you know who else graduated from the AHL and played 1,000 games? Like it's not that. This is just kind of a shout out to all AHL grads. Like, you know, one that's near and dear to my heart is certainly Nathan Walker. Friend of the show. It feels like a long time ago that we had him on the podcast earlier this season, but you know, he's another guy who's kind of like, you know, you sort of watch these guys grow up in a lot of ways when you're covering the AHL, and then you sort of see them become these like inseparable parts of an NHL roster. You know, you sort of see people say like, hey, this guy's really good, like for like walks, like I always like love seeing him get into a fight with a guy who seems to be like a head taller than him and see this guy, you know, like I think it just happened the other day where there's this guy and he's literally had Walker like bent, you know, he had his like jersey kind of up over his head. He was trying to push him to the ice and Walker would just like planted his skates into the ice somehow and just did not move. And eventually like reversed the momentum on the fight and just kind of fought back and like ended up being this huge, like, momentum swing for the St. Louis Blues. It seemed like at least, you know, where they're pumped up their players. Obviously the Blues are kind of, you know, seemingly fated to hit the golf course this summer once the 82 games are up. But, you know, it's great to see. And, you know, you always love seeing those kinds of guys where they just make that big impact. And it just, you know, I'm not a parent, so I can't really speak to this, but it makes you feel like a proud parent in some way.
I consistently call the Barracuda rookies my children that I raised with my own two hands, so I get it. I did a little Google here, and I have thought of a couple. So number one for me is Philippe Deneau, who's currently with the LA Kings, but he was actually originally a draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks and played for the Rockford Ice Hogs, and they didn't really expect him to turn into much of anything, I don't think, and now he is just a really, really great player over on the LA Kings. Another former Rockford IceHog, and one of my personal favorite players of all time, despite the fact that he's currently playing for the St. Louis Blues, Brandon Saad was a big AHL player. Came up, made an impact, won 2 Stanley Cups with Chicago, got unceremoniously traded to Columbus, where I was obviously thrilled. Was only here for a couple of seasons and then got traded back to Chicago. And again, now is playing with St. Louis. I don't know how close. I know that you said this wasn't about 1,000 games, but I am now interested to know how close Brendan Saad is to 1,000 games, because I think it's probably closer than I want to admit.
So I actually... Right,
he's at 865 games played. So in a couple seasons, he's going to be hitting the 1,000 game mark, which is... I hate that, but...
So I actually did find some AHL graduates that went on to play over 1,000 games in the NHL. Just to start, now this player had 73 games in the AHL with the Houston Aeros, 2007-2008, Kyle Clutterbuck. We also have Chris Letang, who started with Wilkes-Barre Scranton back in 2007-2008. And another one I found real quick was Sam Gagner, who has had 3 separate stints.
Oh, my guy.
Yeah, 3 separate stints in the AHL, but has played 1,000 NHL games. So
I've seen a bunch there are of some. Oilers games this season with the Sharks. I've also seen Bakersfield, their AHL affiliate, play the Barracuda. And I feel like every single time they're like, oh, Jay's coming, we have to scratch Sam Gagner because they don't want me to watch him play, which is sad because I love Sam Gagner. He might be like my, you know how sometimes you just like some guy and you're like, yes, that's my some guy. That's Sam Gagner for me.
Sam Gagner. Yeah, I love him.
It's my second favorite Gagner to ever play for the Philadelphia Flyers.
It's okay, confusing for okay, fair. Flyers or... Was it, he got traded twice in this like space of 45 minutes, and I can never remember which team he stopped with.
He was in Philadelphia for like, oh boy, it's gonna bug me. It was more than one season, I feel like. Oh, but okay. I just remember being confused.
I want to say he was traded from the Oilers to, it must have been to Tampa Bay, and then like literally 45 minutes later they traded him again. And it must have been to the Flyers. One of my favorite trade sequences of all time.
I'm sorry, it was just one season. He was there in the 2015-16 season, which I consistently call the most confusing season ever because of that one in particular way. But to conclude this segment, maybe tee up my segment for next week, I kind of pivoted from this one a little bit, but I had to flesh it out a little bit. But did you guys ever play a game... Is an old computer game called Pajama Sam?
No, what? I think that was after my time.
Never played Pajama Sam? Oh my gosh.
That was probably after my time too. I'm sorry. I sound like I'm super old.
Well, it's an edutainment game.
I don't recognize it. So.
I was about to say, I'll tee up the clip for you next time, but there's this great segment. Where it was just one thing, it was one of those games where you just kind of there's a puzzle, but you kind of click on everything and it just kind of makes noise or whatever. But there's this phone that you go up and have Pajama Sam dial, and he gets what they call the complaints department. But the entire time in the segment, all that happens in the complaints department is that the lady on the other side of the line complains about stuff and then hangs up on him. So I was thinking to myself, my idea for next week is that we're going to have the complaints department where, you know, we're going to call in and go around the horn and we're going to have something that we complain about.
Excellent. I love to complain.
Well, now I think I'm about to drop $25 on Steam because you can buy the complete Pajama Sam pack because I just want to check this out.
The game that this one originates in is Pajama Sam 2, Thunder and Lightning Aren't So Frightening.
Incredible.
Okay, so that's only $6.99. That's a little bit easier to stomach because I just need to check this out.
The clips on you, all the clips of the interactions are on YouTube. They're. I was about to say, it's one of those ones I didn't really get it as a kid, but it's one of those things you really appreciate as an adult because it's like the person on the other side of the line picks up and she goes, "Thank you for calling the complaints department. This is Sheila, and I'm starting to get hoarse from having to talk on the phone all day."
Sheila's my spirit animal. That's all
right.
I need to know.
That's me every day at work. Unfortunately, this is not the premier Pajama Sam podcast of the Call of Time, so we do have to move on. But I am excited for the complaints department next week. Next up, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, we've got a special guest. The Laval Rocket are a really interesting team in a very stupid division. So we've got a very good friend of mine and a co-worker of mine over at the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got Scott Mattler to come and talk a little bit about the Laval Rocket. So One of the more interesting stories in the North Division this season for the AHL is how stupid hard it is to make the playoffs. And a really interesting team is the Laval Rocket, who spent most of the first month of the season losing a bunch of games and now appear to be pretty solidly in a playoff spot and are fighting their way into the playoffs, whether the rest of the team likes it or not. And we've got another friend who covers the Laval Rocket to jump on the show to come and chat a little bit about his team. We've got Scott Matler, who is one half of Locked On Canadiens. He covers the Habs and the Laval Rocket over at Habs Eyes on the Prize. And he's also a really good friend of mine. So I thought, hey, let's bring him on. So, Dina, if you want to bring Scott into the studio, we can...
Hello.
Get things started. So thanks for joining us, Scott. We appreciate it. We are knowledgeable about many things, but the Laval Rocket is not one of them. So I guess let's start off with at the very beginning. I kind of alluded to it there in the introduction. The Rocket were kind of slow out of the gate this season. What was up with that? Was it just a bunch of... I know they had some injuries. I know they had some bad luck. Like, was there one big reason why Laval just decided to lose all of their games for like a month straight?
You're being very generous when you say that they were slow out of the gate. They were unwatchable for the first month of the season. And I say that as someone who has watched a lot of bad AHL hockey since I've started covering it for all the Habs affiliates. I've seen like worst team in the league bad, and they were trending below that. And the head coach in Jean-Francois Houle in training camp and at the rookie showcase here in Buffalo said, it's going to take a little bit. It's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be a bumpy ride. And I would anticipate by the time Christmas rolls around and everyone heard that and panicked, you will see this team very much be coming together and gelling as young pieces and veterans and everything started coming together. And then like clockwork, the calendar kind of ticked over into December and the synergy was there. Even with players being called up, some players are hurt. This team started clicking on all cylinders, started winning games, getting points, and became a nuisance. They were dead last and found themselves right back in the playoff hunt in the AHL North. And some of it is just, it's an adjustment period for a lot of younger players, for newer players, and some of the veterans who are coming back. Because there's some holdovers from the team that went to the conference finals a few years ago, and they've changed over a lot since then. This is just a team that really had to deal with the Canadiens' injury crisis, their own injury crisis, and still come together and kind of get to even be in the playoff hunt right now is a pretty impressive feat, given that they started so miserably, I think is the right way to put it.
So talking kind of about that injury crisis, I feel you 100% on that with Columbus and Cleveland, but continuing the talk about the playoffs here. So aside from a match versus the Springfield Thunderbirds on the 5th, Laval's going to solely play against the North from basically here on out. You know, that includes two games against Cleveland on the 11th and 13th in Ohio, and a home and home against Belleville to round out the regular season. It seems like Laval's been playing like exclusively Belleville here, it seems like. So is this North heavy matchup to close out the season a good thing or a bad thing for this Laval Rocket crew?
It's a hard thing to say because for the previous few years, the Belleville Senators were their boogeyman team, the team they could not beat, even when they were very clearly the better team. We're talking like 40 shots to 19. They scored one goal and the Senators scored five because that's how nonsense works in this league. And every year there's a different team that they just come out strong against. Some years it's Rochester. It's been Cleveland in the past. Syracuse for a while after they played them in the playoffs, never lost at home to Syracuse. It helps them secure more points in that division there that they're holding onto the last spot. They have a 2-point buffer on Belleville and a magic number of 15 between points won and lost between that. If they can keep winning these games and Springfield or Syracuse or anyone wants to help them out, that number is going to get halved pretty quickly there. It terrifies me because every divisional game means just a little bit more looking at the standings here. Cleveland's playing for, you know, the first overall spot in the division there. Syracuse is trying to defend their first overall spot, though. They're not going to take it easy, despite the fact they are very likely in qualification here. And the Senators just like to play every game like if they don't win, they're going to die trying. And by die trying, I mean trying to murder every single Rocket player on the ice, whether they are winning or losing, and not get called for anything because Justin Kia is a hockey refereeing terrorist. So, my apologies if that was a lot. That
Scott
is,
has opinions about officiating.
I have a lot of opinions.
Considering Corey's rant from last week's episode.
He is a nightmare.
And Scott, one of the interesting storylines to follow recently for Laval is both the Montreal, Laval enthusiasts, your first impressions of David Reinbacher. It's a huge addition for them. He's the fifth overall pick of last year's NHL entry draft. Already kind of off to a pretty good start with a goal and two assists in six games. What are your first impressions of watching him so far?
I look at someone, and Habs fans are going to pull out what's left of their hair when they hear this. I don't see flash and sizzle like I see with Lane Hutson or even some of the other defensive prospects in the system, but I see someone who just isn't fazed by anything, by anybody out there. He makes a mistake and he's not panicking. He's not chasing the play. He's resetting his positioning and getting back to his basics there and doing the little things right. He's cutting off angles. He's using his stick and his leverage to create those defensive advantages for himself. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the strongest guy. He's going to grow into his frame there. And then, we're talking about a different story. But I see someone who is just so calm and collected. He knows when to step up in the play, when he can carry the puck. His first AHL goal was ridiculous. That I've never seen him do anything like that. He's usually a very safe outlet kind of pass player that he takes it through the neutral zone, toe drags around somebody, and then just rips one by the goalie is wild. Is that to know he has the confidence to do that shows that his season in Switzerland was a disaster in a lot of ways, not through any fault of his own. But coming in, I see someone who's very quickly going to be playing a lot of minutes for them next year. They already trust him as the top penalty killer. They put him out there in situations to see what he is made of. He's listed as the third pairing more often than not on the lineup sheet, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's playing, second pairing minutes there. The head coach trusts him explicitly. He came in like, we're putting him on the penalty kill because we can trust you to be responsible with the puck. His composure and everything, even when players are in his face, it's getting rough and physical, is that he's ready to just give it right back to people. He's not afraid to be that person here.
Okay. And, we've talked about David Reinbacher, and we've heard about a lot of places like Joshua Waugh, Philippe Maillet, Brandon Gignac, basically all season long. But looking a little bit further down the depth charts in the lineup, I want to know who has been your unsung Laval Rocket hero this season and why?
Jakub Dobish in net has, and it's hard to say he's unsung when he has 22 wins on the season, but someone who started the year who couldn't hold their net, hold their crease, keep their bearings, playing a big scrambling style in net, now settling in and being composed, using all of his gigantic frame to take away the net, blockering pucks away, being active and playing the puck and moving it frequently. He is not a goalie that is easy to predict. I watch him, he is constantly playing the puck. Even if he's defending his post, he's got a stick trying to swipe pucks away, move things around to keep things moving. He likes to be very active, and that suits his style. And unfortunately, one of the players on the Rocket injured list, someone that I was really hoping would get NHL time this year, was Xavier Simoneau, who's 5'6" on a good day and plays like he's a foot taller than that. He is a delightful disturber of the peace, in that he has never met someone that he is not willing to get in their face about. And he is always in the dangerous areas, getting pucks to where they need to be, getting in front of the net, doing the dirty work that leads to goals. They're not always pretty, and he might get cross-checked in the face or in the back or something, but he's going to put the puck in dangerous areas. He's someone that is built for playoff hockey, for high-intensity hockey, and in these North Division matchups with Syracuse, with a couple of games against Cleveland and Belleville left, that's where this little honey badger of a guy thrives in his gameplay. And I'm deeply, deeply sad that he had season-ending shoulder surgery a couple of weeks ago. He is an irreplaceable part of the lineup for that kind of snarl and level that he brings. They might get more goals out of somebody else, but it is hard to replace a guy that is willing to fight someone literally a foot taller than him more than once and win at any point in time.
It sounds like we found Laval's Trey Fix-Wolanski, and I am 100% here for it.
It was interesting to hear you mention Dobesh as well there, because as listeners of Cold as Calling know, I love goalies. And I wanted to ask you about the goalie situation in Laval, because it feels like for the first time in quite a long time, they have something approaching stability in net between Dobesh and Kazimir Kaskasuo, who seemed to have arrived halfway through the season and then immediately was like, well, I'm a great AHL goalie again. What has it been like to have kind of two guys in net that you can rely on? Because I feel like basically since Carey Price went down, sorry to bring this up, but the Canadiens organization from top to bottom has struggled with goaltending, and the Rocket don't seem to be struggling right now. So, like, is that accurate, or is this just an outside perspective that's kind of a little bit off?
It's been a very weird thing that with the Rocket, for basically since they fired Sylvain Lefebvre and hired Joel Bouchard and then Jean-Francois Houle, they've had very good young goaltenders and a very good 1B to supplement them. Caden Primo was very good for the Rocket for several years, and for two of those years, he had Kevin Poulin as his backup. And Kevin Poulin dragged them kicking and screaming into the playoffs a few years ago while Primo was up filling in for an injured Carey Price, getting his doors blown off every night at the NHL level because the Canadiens were not great, admittedly. And then Primo came back in and was trending to be, you know, the MVP had they made it into the final round there. And Primo graduated last year. He needed waivers this year. They didn't think he was going to make it. So it became Dobesh and Straussman. And Straussman was not able to kind of carry that load behind this defense. And when they brought in Kazimir Kaskisuo, that's around the time the team started to turn around. And I don't know if it was having a more veteran netminder who does a lot of off-ice training watching his video blogs are fantastic, because you see how he prepares and everything with that to kind of help work with another young goaltender. Straussman's not exactly a veteran. I think he's had like two or three years out of college at the most. Kaskisuo is 30 years old. He's been around the block so far and to see these things, and it helps settle things down a little bit, having an actual backup that you can rely on. They're not afraid to go to Kaskisuo in a back-to-back. If Dobesh played a lot of minutes the night before, faced a lot of shots, they can go to Kaskisuo and get solid goaltending out of that. And it's helped settle that position. And I'm not ready to say that Jakub Dobesh is going to go up to the NHL next year, but compared to where I was in, let's say, November, early December, I'm less inclined to think that he'll go up there and just be a punching bag for other teams. He's a little bit chaotic, but they've really seemed to have kind of dialed it in there. And we know in the NCAA, Jacob Fowler is dominating. They've got a goalie in Russia. They've got Quentin Miller in the QMJHL. They have a nice pipeline of prospects here that they can afford to also be patient with someone like him and let him develop at his pace there. He's got another year on his entry-level deal, and we'll see where he's at then. We'll see where Montembeau is at in the NHL, where Caden Primo is at, where Jacob Fowler is at. But I think they're in a really good spot goaltending-wise, almost better than almost any other position in this organization right now.
Scott, it's kind of wide open in the North Division as Dina has waxed on about her, you know, her struggles with the North Division and how hard it is to lock up a playoff spot. Laval's kind of teetering right there. They're in the last playoff spot in the North Division. You know, it's a pretty wide open race right now. What do you think that the Laval Rocket need to do in order to make the playoffs this season?
They need their power play to come back to life a little bit. They had a game against Utica last week where they went 0-6 on the power play in a game they lost 3-1. Even going, and I'm not going to say they're going to score on every single one, but if you go 50% on that, you're winning that game. They struggled against the Senators this weekend. They're not playing poorly, but they need some of those bounces. They've had a lot of grade A chances and just not finished on them. And some of it might be maybe they just need to adjust things between their pairings. The top unit, if they don't score in like the first 30 seconds or so, kind of struggle to hold the zone a little bit because there are a lot of shots more than puck transition in that group there. If they can get that working, their penalty kill has been spectacular. And some of that is Jakob Dobish. Some of that is David Reinbacher and guys just absolutely giving up the body. But they need a little bit more out of the offensive group here. It's great that you can grind out a game 2-1 from time to time. But sometimes if you're getting 4 to 5 grade A chances in a period, you want to be scoring on two or three of those and give yourselves that cushion there. Give yourselves a lead to play with so you're not trying to play tight, defensive, exhausting hockey all the time and blowing out your legs going into what is now basically a bunch of is all back-to-back weekend games. You need to be able to conserve that energy so you're not going into the second day exhausted and not having anything for a team that in some cases might be rested or didn't have to travel like you did.
It's going to be interesting, I think. Again, we've talked at length about the North Division being just the stupidest division in the AHL this season. If you had to, we'll finish up here with one last kind of quick fire question. If you had to pick, do the Laval Rocket make the playoffs?
I think that they are. They're going to squeak in and it's going to be an absolute horror show because last year they squeaked in and lost the play-in round to Utica in two games where they just could not generate any offense. And I'm kind of seeing a replay here. But they're playing Toronto, a team where they have alternated blowing them out and losing to by blowouts this season. I don't know if my heart could take a Toronto-Montreal, even AHL series, but we'll find out. I think they'll squeak in. They've played Cleveland very well this year. Sorry to my hosts on that.
No problem.
And I look at this and go, if they had just been slightly average in the first month or so of the season, this is a completely different storyline. I think they'll squeak in because Belleville is not a team that it doesn't feel like they have that same group and intimidation factor that some of the other teams in front of them do. I think they'll squeak in and then it's anybody's guess. It all depends on who's coming in from the NCAAs, who's coming in from the junior leagues and everything that can help reinforce this team. Are you going to see Lane Hutson on this Rocket team? Because depending on the time his season's over, there's only a handful of Habs games left potentially. What guys are going to come in and reinforce this team and give them that little bit of offensive boost there? I think that this is a group with experience that can absolutely kind of push their way into that final playoff spot. If they pushed up to fourth, I would be stunned. They're only a point behind it, but they have three games in hand on the Marlies have three games in hand on them somehow. I don't understand how that happened, but anything's possible. I think they'll squeak in though at this point.
Well, we appreciate you coming to talk to us about the Rocket. Like I said, it's a team that we have kind of been watching and are intrigued by, but haven't really been able to look at in any detail. If people want to pay more attention to the Rocket, I can't in good conscience recommend that they pay attention to the Habs at this point in the season. But if people want to do that, where can they find you and your work online?
You can find me at Scott Matla, Scott Matla on the hell site known as Twitter.com. Locked On Canadians at @LO_Canadians as well, where my co-host Laura and I host that daily, and Habs Eyes on the Prize at what used to be SB Nation, but is now an independent site. All my recaps are there. Plenty of other analysis and stuff. If you do want a glimpse into the nightmarish world of the Montreal Canadiens this season, I do appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat AHL hockey. Not a lot of people reach out for that, so I'm very happy to always share what expertise that I do have.
Huge thanks to Scott for coming to talk about the Laval Rocket and humoring me with my endless questions about goalies. Before we move on, I want to tell you a little bit more about another one of our sponsors for today's episode, and that is BetStamp. Sports betting has rapidly risen in popularity, and having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to maximize your profits. There's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/AHL, you'll be connected to all of the sportsbook in your region, along with a review of each platform and its unique benefits. All of these sportsbook have different and valuable signup offers for new users. When you register through our link, you're automatically going to receive the best offer at each one. When you use multiple sportsbook, you ensure that you can always access the best available odds, which is the key to successful sports betting. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, support our podcast, consider signing up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/AHL. Must be 21 or over, only valid in US states and Canadian provinces where sports betting is legalized. And of course, please gamble responsibly. Now, we are in the thick of pre-playoff hype right now. Last week, we checked in on some teams that were going to clinch, some teams that might miss the playoffs entirely. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that because it's that time of year. So, Dina, why don't you kick it off? What are we talking about in, or who are we talking about, I should say, in this week's playoff primer update?
Well, I actually have a quick little Easter egg for Corey here because he was referencing this fantasy AHL fantasy competition that we had in the last podcast we had together. And I found his list of teams or his list of players with us, Seth Griffith, Martin Furk, Vinny Letary, Connor Carrick, Leon Gavanka, and Samuel Ayreson. So compared to my...
We should do that next season. We should do
a fantasy. Oh, I'm down for that.
Just calling fantasy hockey.
Compared to my team of... Now, he beat me royally in points here. My team of Zach Dalpe, Max McCormick, TJ Tynan, Simon Edvinson, who I grabbed like before he was good, Noel Hofemeyer, and Jonas Johansson. So, yeah, Corey had me beat. But, and another thing, real quick, too, for people that follow me and saw me kind of freaking out a little bit, that Trent Vogelhuber might be leaving to take a job with his alma mater, Miami of Ohio. False alarm, everyone. No, it wasn't a April Fool's Day joke or anything like that. I would not joke about that. But turns out that Anthony Noreen will be taking that head coaching job in Miami hockey. So we can all, everyone with Cleveland, just breathe. It's all okay. Anyway, back to my original segment. So we did have some teams clinch last week. And Corey, Jay, I want you to tell me what you notice all these teams have in common. Okay, I'll go in order of when they clinched. The Grand Rapids Griffins, the Ontario Reign, the Tucson Roadrunners, the Providence Bruins, they're the exception, the Colorado Eagles, the Calgary Wranglers. What stands out about that?
I was going to guess that all of them clinched after playing the Cleveland Monsters, but is it... is the connection that none of them play in the North Division?
Well, yes, that is a connection, but excluding the Providence Bruins, they're all in the West.
Mm.
That was what I was going to guess. It was all Western Conference. I feel like it's been a minute since anybody in the East has clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah. Weird. It does. And honestly, the Providence Bruins kind of snuck in there unexpectedly while we're all looking at these Western Conference teams. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, the Providence Bruins are a real live team, you know, and here they are. So they are real. They're a real boy. They're a real boy, Geppetto. But we are getting down to the final games. Every team except for the San Diego Gulls, the Colorado Eagles, and the Rockford Ice Hogs, as of recording on April 1st, they have single digits left to play. Those teams I just mentioned all have 10. So we are truly in crunch time. Not pun, definitely not intended. Hello, Syracuse Crunch fans. So one thing that's funny to look at here is, okay, so the Atlantic has two teams that have clinched, Hershey Providence. The North has famously zero. The Central has two teams that have clinched. The Pacific Division has five teams that are clinched. They have two spots left open, currently held by the Bakersfield Condors and the Abbotsford Canucks. So, Jay, didn't you say earlier that you figured out how many teams could clinch technically before the North does, so, possibly?
Looking at this, so we have, nine teams have clinched so far. There are one, two, three, four. There are five teams that have a lower magic number or the same magic number as the Syracuse Crunch right now, who have the lowest number in the North. So that is 11 teams could clinch a playoff. Like 11 out of 22 could ostensibly clinch a playoff spot before someone in the North clinches. I also want to just kind of, we talked a little bit about the Pacific there. The Bakersfield Condors and the Abbotsford Canucks have not clinched yet. They both have a magic number of one.
Yeah.
Henderson has been eliminated. San Jose has been eliminated. The San Diego Gulls are technically, despite being ninth in the Pacific, have not technically been eliminated from the playoffs yet. They do have a magic number of 35, and they are fully 22 points behind, 20 points behind the Abbotsford Canucks. So they would have to win every single game, and one of Abbotsford or Bakersfield would have to lose every single game here on out. So basically, the Pacific is set right now. Yeah. Essentially, all seven of their teams are in, and it's just a matter of seeding versus the North, where no one has
a magic number of 35 with 10 games remaining. I'm pulling for you, San Diego. That's just this whole thing. Just the more I look at it, the more stressed I get. But anyway, let's look ahead to see who may be clinching before we meet again next week. So in the Atlantic, the Charlotte Checkers look to be locking up that number three spot here very soon with a magic number of three. Now, looking through the next 7 days, they have two games. It is a back-to-back series against Hartford, who is they are two spots down with a magic number of 10. Now, it's doubtful that they clinch, but with the Springfield Thunderbirds being the first team out, the way that this is all figured is they take points away from the team that goes below the playoff line. So if they lose points, it also lowers the magic number of the teams above them. So if something goes haywire there, then maybe Hartford could clinch, but that's going to be a good matchup to watch this coming weekend. In between them, in fourth place, are the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. They have a magic number of four. So conceivably, Charlotte and Wilkes-Barre Scranton likely will be clinched by the next time we talk. In the North, we have Syracuse at four, kind of going back to our special segment here. They will be in Laval on Friday and then in Belleville on Saturday. So those are going to be some key points. Likely there's a chance they'll be, we'll finally get our team to clinch out of the North. Cleveland with a magic number of seven. They have a rough go of it here this coming weekend. They have a trip back to Rochester on Wednesday. Yippee. you heard me talk earlier about that 4-3 overtime loss. But if they can get another point, I'd be happy. They face off against Wilkes-Barre on Friday and then on Saturday against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, who are in a playoff race of their own. So those are the two teams most likely out of the North, unless Rochester wins against Cleveland. They have a magic number of nine. It could happen for them as they take a swing into the Atlantic Division against Providence and Bridgeport on Friday, Saturday. In the Central Division, the two closest teams to clinching are the Rockford Ice Hogs with a magic number of one. Although not an easy row, they're going to be at Milwaukee on Tuesday and then at Grand Rapids on Friday and then at home against Grand Rapids on Saturday. Conceivably, there's a good chance they'll get a point, or Iowa Wild will lose a point because they're going to be playing against Hershey on Friday and Saturday. So there's Rockford's point. Congratulations, Rockford. We'll see you in the playoffs. Texas Stars are next with 6 points, and then we already talked about the Pacific. So a few teams looking to lock up. But by this time next week, the Pacific will be set, and yeah, hopefully we'll get the North in the discussion here.
Yeah. Just literally any North division, literally any North division team clinch a playoff spot challenge.
level almost impossible.
Right. It's truly, and again, we kind of talked about this. I was talking to Andrew Rinaldi about this the other day, actually. The Manitoba Moose would be out of a playoff spot in any other division. They have a sub-500 points percentage, and they've got 61 points, which would be second last in the Atlantic, last in the North by 6 points, and would be, again, out of a playoff spot in the Pacific Division as well by a score of, I think, 7 points. I can't do math. 5 points. But because the Central is a different kind of stupid to the North, they're going to make the playoffs with a sub points percentage of with a sub 500 point percentage. Wild.
I'm going to start a petition to move the Cleveland Monsters back to the Central Division. I will post the
I would sign this. I would sign this.
I'm glad somebody.
One more thing I'd like to add here to what you were saying earlier, Dana, about the Atlantic Division with the, I believe it's the Charlotte Checkers kind of looking to lock up a playoff spot. Hartford's been bad, like very, very bad recently. I was just looking at the stats just to see they're 1-7, 1-1 in their last 10 games.
Oh,
which
wow.
Which may be one of the worst stretches. I think it's the worst stretch in the Atlantic, if not, you know, probably one of the worst in the American Hockey League, especially, you know, for amongst teams in playoff position. So it's almost one of those things you almost have to ask yourself the question, if the Lehigh Valley Phantoms play well enough, and we just said earlier they have – you know, basically two more goaltenders than they had, or, you know, will aim to have two more goaltenders possibly. You know, I'm not sure how long it'll take Kolosov to get over here, but the Phantoms could be a team that could possibly be looking to move up, as well as, you know, the Hartford Wolfpack. Not going to say they're going to miss, because, I mean, they still have that nice cushion over Springfield here, and Springfield's been equally as mediocre, if not worse. You know, you could be looking at possibly seeing some stocks, you know, as they say, stonks are, you know, moving places here a little bit.
He's harshing my vibe here because I'm just trying to look like, oh, maybe Cleveland could win against Wilkes-Barre or Lehigh Valley. And he's basically making it sound like it's not going to happen. And I'm just getting sad. One last question I do have for those that do the Calder Cup playoff picture, playoff primer with the league. How are you not counting out? Okay, so when we're looking at the magic numbers, they also have magic numbers to clinch the regular season title. Okay, tell me why. Okay, so Hershey has a magic number of 9 for this. Almost every other team is marked as E for eliminated, except for, and I'll do it in descending order, the Coachella Valley Firebirds with 27. The Milwaukee Admirals with 31, the Providence Bruins with 33, the Tucson Roadrunners with 37, and the Colorado Eagles with 39. Can we just put E's there? Hershey's going to take it. They only have 9.
This, we touched on this last week, actually, because I asked Corey, are they going to clinch the, are they going to win the Kilpatrick, I believe it's called. And Corey was like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to say anything then.
So I'm bringing it back.
It's fine.
Up.
You could just give it to them. Again, Hershey's been stupid this year.
They've lost
17 games total.
I want to know what that's like.
Of the 47 of the 60, I can't do math on the fly. Of the 64 games that they've played this season, they have not registered a point in 12 of them.
Again, I want to know what that's like.
Right.
Yeah, their loss on Tuesday was very atypical for them, last Tuesday, I should say, because they lost. It was 4-1. I was like, I can't remember the last time we've lost by a count that the Bears have lost by a count that's not, you know, by more than one goal in regulation. Like, it was just a very atypical situation. Now, that doesn't mean they've been playing super, you know, they found ways to win. So I'm not trying to poo-poo, you know, on their success here by any stretch, but there's sometimes where I always say, I am very much against putting the cart before the horse and saying, like, yes, when it comes to my teams especially, just because it's just the way, you know, that the hand that life has dealt me at times here, where it's like, you know, anytime you get ahead of yourself, even just for a little bit, you know, their magic number to clinch may be 9, but then it's sort of, you sort of think to yourself, well, what could go wrong possibly? You know,
how can this game for the rest of the season?
This is how you can tell that I'm a Philadelphia Flyers fan, because you kind of ask yourself, like, what's going on? What could go wrong for these guys?
Okay. Sometimes the generational hockey trauma just really shines through. Like,
exactly. And that's why I'm glad I have the Bears, because the Bears are good. And the Flyers have always just given me anything but heartache, and I've never had any fun.
I'm looking
like
directly.
2010.
I'm looking directly at the San Jose Barracuda.
So before we wrap it up, I just have to say Corey has just killed me in our little chat in our studio recording, just going, if the Moose make it, then they'll earn the Woos nickname. And Jay immediately responds back with Manitoba Woos.
Manitoba Woos. That's when they win.
And it just, I don't know. It just, it's
And that's the title of today's episode. No.
The Manitoba
Woos. They
bang
two wins. It works.
And the Waval Walk It.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no way to do the W that doesn't make it sound like you're doing the, like, ooh.
I know, it's... Yeah, like...
Which is upsetting, because I would love to do, like, Columbus, but unfortunately, that sounds bad.
I know, it makes it sound like you're making fun of somebody, and you're really not. You're just, like, putting W's for the wins.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to do it, though, for this week's edition of Calder's Calling, a kind of chaotic edition, I think. But I think sometimes that's a good thing. If you want to check out our written coverage, it's a little bit less chaotic, but probably a little bit more easy to absorb. You can check us out online at thecaldertimes.com. You can follow us on Twitter at thecaldertimes, all one word. And we are also on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and all of the things at thecaldertimes. Subscribe and leave a 5-star review, leave a positive rating on our podcast, hit like, hit subscribe, hit the comment button if you really liked it. Let us know what you thought of it. Share it with your friends, families, neighbors, mailman, pastor, anyone that you think likes hockey, anyone that you think could like hockey. And finally, we'd like to extend a final thank you to our sponsor, Document Doctors. Until next week, I hope your team wins, and we'll see you all next Wednesday.